Welcome back to another episode of Books Closed. This episode is sponsored by Mind's Eye Creative, the tattoo industry's go-to print shop for over 10 years. Mr. Flash Machine, a revival of production tattoo flash offering a collection of over 400 sheets and counting. And Kosai Publications, offering quality books on irezumi, tattooing, zen, and Japanese culture. Well, well, well. This week brings us on a journey through some areas we haven't fully explored in this discussion of social media's impact on tattooing. This entire season, I have talked to a handful of some of the greatest tattooers, but haven't spent a lot of time with younger, newer ones. There are a couple artists that have caught my eye while making the show, due to the way their work stands out and to the huge followings that they have amassed online. I'm going to talk to a couple of them today, and then later I will be joined by Jason Scott, who was on the very first episode, to help me wrap this all up, because this is the last episode for season one. A tattooer who goes by the name Winston the Whale on Instagram does tattoos that don't look quite like anything that I do. He clearly has visual influences from outside of tattooing and isn't confined to the traditional idea of doing a black outline, then black shading, then coloring. Winston, or Dave, as the real world would refer to him, had sent me a message about Oregon's tattoo licensing procedures. Since I had just been in Portland for some of the last few episodes, I was interested to learn more about the statewide method of using tattoo schools as part of getting licensed, and to learn about Dave's non-traditional approach to tattooing. So I will be talking to Winston the Whale right after this break. This week we are sponsored by Mind's Eye Creative, the tattoo industry's go-to print shop for over 10 years. Specializing in t-shirts, stickers, art prints, patches, and pins, Mind's Eye Creative can help you market and merchandise your art or business. I recently decided that I wanted to make some t-shirts for this show, a way for the most dedicated listeners to show their support by having it plastered across their chest. Yes, I am an artist, but I am certainly not a graphic designer. I get a little intimidated when it comes to making sure my artwork is print ready, from picking the type of printing I want, the type of shirts, etc. The folks at Mind's Eye Creative were super helpful in making my shirts a reality. Most people probably don't know about the subtle differences between t-shirt brands or paper types or sticker sizes. Let the pros guide you through the process to get what you are looking for. Check out mindseye.net for more info on all of their printing services and use promo code BOOKSCLOSED for 10% off your next order. That's mindseye.net, MINDZAI, to make your order. And also check them out on Instagram at Mind's Eye Creative. How long have you been tattooing?
Technically, my first tattoo I ever did was November 29th. No, wait, not two. I'm sorry, not 2011, 2014. Yeah, so about 4 years now. It was like sketchy stick and poke out of my apartment for like a few months, but it was kind of crazy when I started. You know, I had been pursuing a career as an artist, and when I started tattooing, I already had a pretty good following, you know, on Instagram. And I'd say within about 3 weeks to a month of doing my first stick and poke and posting it, I was booked out of my apartment doing tattoos like every day. And then within about 6 months of, you know, that first tattoo, I was working at a shop tattooing every day at a shop.
Doing stick and poke?
No, doing machine tattoos. So yeah, I transitioned to machine tattoos when I went to tattoo school here in Oregon.
Yeah, so what's the deal with the tattoo school? Because you had written me a message saying that the regulations in Oregon are based around tattoo schools as an option for people to learn.
So the way it works is, you know, if you're a new tattooer, you haven't been tattooing in another state where you've had some kind of licensure or at least proof that you've been, you know, paying taxes and tattooing legitimately for it's either 3 or 4 years. I can't remember the exact number. If you don't have that, then you have to go to tattoo school. Tattoo school, it's a total joke, man, but it's all based around the health licensing office.
So how much does it cost?
It's about, the one that I did was about $7,400, but they range all the way up to like there's a guy that runs one where he, it's like a one-on-one kind of school deal. And he does, I think it's like 15,000 or something like that.
So are these just tattoo schools? Or are they tattoo shops that are, have like a sector of their education?
So apparently there are some, there's a route you can go that you can become a tattoo school, like out of a shop or whatever. I don't know how all that works. I don't know how that, you know, how you get that certification or whatever, but most of the schools will also have like some kind of shop thing attached to it. Like the one that I went to, the instructor would also tattoo out of there and charge, you know, for tattoos out of the tattoo school. And then there's another one that has like a shop that's like separate from the school, but it's, you know, they're like attached in the same building or whatever. So there's, I think there's a little bit of a mixture going on there, you know?
That's so weird. I'd never heard of that.
Tattoo, you mean like the whole tattoo school requirement thing?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of tattoo schools, but I always thought that they were just like private things that people would just do by choice, but I've never heard it as a requirement or as an option that's outlined by a state regulation.
Yeah, so I mean, it's made Oregon and Portland kind of a unique landscape as far as like the tattoo community goes because of that, you know? It's created a little bit of a pop or wave of new tattooers who are able to kind of like bypass a lot of, I guess, the paying your dues part of getting into tattooing. And they can just, I mean, if you have a social media and you have a following and you know that, you know a few people and you get together, you can open a private studio as long as you go to school. And school, if you do it right and you have enough people to tattoo, I did school in 2.5 months, you know? I got in there and got it over with, and like I had a chair waiting for me at a shop before I even finished tattoo school. So it was like, it happened so fast. It kind of blew my mind whenever I first got into it, because I had hung out with a lot of tattooers, and my good buddy was a tattooer. I'd go hang out at the shop and whatever. And it always seemed like this thing that, okay, you have to kind of trudge through this process of the apprenticeship. You have to kind of like be this kind of bottom of the barrel person for a little bit before you can kind of build up to where, you know, wherever you want to be with your tattoo career. Yeah. You know, and then I found out about tattoo school and I was already using social media, and it was insane how fast it all happened for me. It was like within a year, I was booked out for months doing tattoos every fucking day. I surprised myself with it. I didn't really like, I wasn't ready for it, to be honest with you.
Right.
I
think, yeah, of course.
I think it happened a little faster than I was ready to anticipate.
How did you deal with that then? How did you deal to adjusting to being so busy from still being a little green?
Lots of anxiety.
I think that's normal for anyone starting to tattoo.
Yeah, totally. Learning to tattoo is a fucking terrifying thing. Man, it's, you know, you're holding this thing that's vibrating. It's permanent. You know, you're sweating bullets. The person's staring you dead in the eye while you're doing it. It's just like fucking terrifying. But I think that, you know, pushing yourself through those experiences helps you grow really fast. And I think that I was surrounded by the right people at the time when I started, and I had already been so versed in making art. You know, I was pulling clean lines with my markers and my paintbrushes and stuff like that years before I had touched a tattoo machine. So my understanding of muscle memory was kind of there, that I kind of bridged mediums from, you know, painting and drawing and all that into tattooing.
Do you think that looking back on it, you could have gotten a more well-rounded education from a more traditional apprenticeship? Or do you think that the school is really all that you're going to get out of that anyway?
Man, so I, like I said, I had been hanging out with some tattooers before the school thing, even before I knew about any of that. And, you know, my weed dealer from high school became a tattooer, and we would go hang out at the shop, and a couple of friends when I was, you know, younger became tattooers. And so I was exposed to that. I got to hang out around that a little bit and get a taste of what it feels like to be around that. But a lot of these people that are getting into tattoo school don't have that perspective and just jump right into it. And it's given way to an interesting new kind of wave and idea of tattooing and an idea of how a shop works and all of that. But yeah, I think that relying solely on the school thing, man, if you're doing that, then you're totally like shorting yourself, you know?
So it is a flawed system, in your opinion.
I mean, I used it to my advantage, and a lot of people are using it to their advantage. But when you actually go in and look at what they're doing in the tattoo schools, when I did my first tattoo, they didn't come look at how I set up. The guy didn't look at my machine. He didn't go, hey, you know, like, how far are you hanging your needle? What volts are you running stuff at? You know, like he walked by about 30 minutes into the tattoo, watched me tattoo for about 2 minutes, nodded and walked away. That was it.
You must have been nailing it.
I mean, it was fucking weird for me because I was scared shitless. You know, I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, like yeah. Sink or swim. All right.
I'm sure you're familiar with the attitude of people that say traditional apprenticeship is the only way to do it. If you don't do that, you're a fucking poser. Or you're not going to learn shit. Why do you think that they're so staunch in that belief?
Well, I think just like any kind of medium of art, if you've been doing something a certain way and you've learned it and you've seen it work really well for you and the people, other people you know who are involved doing it, then that's your opinion and that's your belief. And it can be difficult to watch something happen any other way when you've spent your entire career. You know, a lot of these guys have been tattooing for 20 years and shit, you know, long before social media was even, you know, they could even conceive of what's happening right now. And so, you know, to watch things change so exponentially and so fast and watch things happen that kind of bypass all of these traditions or these, you know, these, this school of thought, I totally understand how that can be difficult. You know, I came up painting graffiti pretty young and it was the same thing when I started, you know, there are like all these kind of rules within graffiti and whatnot. And I watched those change a lot over the year and it has been difficult sometimes to watch how kids out on the street, the way they paint and their attitude about painting is so different from the way I was taught. It's, you know, I get it. You know, you see the kind of like disingenuous qualities of it, right? You see these people come up that aren't necessarily doing it with a lot of respect towards tattooing, but more like, yeah, I get to be a tattooer now. And I can imagine somebody who's poured their life and their soul and their time and everything into it, watching that happen. It can be a little bit of a throwaway culture and people take certain aspects of it for granted.
But at the same time, I think that coming up in something like tattooing or any craft that does have that those set ethics and rules that are kind of imposed on you when you first start, I think as a younger and newer person to something like that, there's always an element of like proving something to the older guys or forging your own path or something that's always going to happen. So I think in 10 more years, all the next wave of kids are going to come through and then maybe we'll be the ones who are shitting on them or saying that, you know, they need to go to tattoo school because that's the way that it's been done for a long time now. And
I hope people don't ever say those words, but but yeah, I totally agree with you. And I've thought about that. I'm like, okay, I'm 4 years into this thing. Like I'm part of this new wave. I'm part of this like kind of avant-garde tattooing, you know, method. I can be a real cynical person sometimes. I'm sure I'll look back, you know, look at them and be like, oh, those kids don't know what the fuck they're doing, you know. Back when I was using Instagram and we were getting followers, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's always going to, the cycle's always going to kind of turn itself over. But it's also an interesting thing to think that so many tattooers, the attitude is that we want to go against the norm or we don't want to follow the rules or we want to do our own thing the way we're going to do it. But then at the same time, someone with that attitude can impose their rules on someone else. You know, someone like you, who you did what you had to do to get where you are, which is this, you know, it comes from the same place. It's just that you didn't take the steps that someone before you may deem acceptable.
Well, you know, so a lot of these kids that are going to tattoo school, they go straight to opening up their shop or straight to a private studio. They don't spend any time in a shop at all where... Yeah, I spent a year at the shop and those conversations I had and that experience I had and watching and observing all of that and all of the guest spots that I've done where I've gone to places where where I've been around people who are, you know, have been in the game for a while. That experience was so invaluable to me. And I take that into account with everything that I do, you know. I think that a little bit of that harsh criticism or that harsh reality, not living in your own bubble, in your own echo chamber of validation, which is exactly what Instagram can really pigeonhole you into existing in, you know, it can make you soft to a fault. I think that a little bit of softness is great. A little bit of open-mindedness to a new way of doing things or a new approach or a new technique or, oh, this person's doing this thing where they're like layering colors in a weird way. And, you know, like just automatically shutting that down. I don't know. There's been plenty of times where I've had to bite my tongue in my opinion because I'm like, oh, that's not the way I would do it. But hey, if this person is going to experiment, let them sink or swim and let them figure it out. And I did some tattoos in the beginning that, holy shit, man, I look back and I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? Why did I put that there? Why did I not put lines on that and put lines on that? Why did I, you know, there's things that I look back on and I'm like, I would never do it that way again. But the avant-garde attitude, the trial and error of going through that and hounding people for healed shots and talking to other tattooers about the formula of how you compose a well-crafted tattoo while still pushing the boundaries and trying something new, you know, has been super important in my own path. And I think a lot of people miss out on that because they don't want to surround themselves with anything other than validation.
About your work specifically, this style that you've embraced and that you've developed, some could say that maybe it's lacking in because you do a lot of colored outlines or colored fields without a black outline around them.
Oh, I've gotten so much shit for this.
I'm sure this isn't the first time someone's asked. Yeah.
I had a feeling this was coming, but go ahead.
Because, you know, an older tattooer who maybe might not agree with the path you've taken, someone like that may point out that these tattoo schools are the problem, and the reason that the path you took didn't work shows in your work, because you're lacking a basic understanding of what needs to happen to make a tattoo last.
You know, I've been doing the no color thing, the no outline thing for a while, and I get people to send me healed shots, and I'm like crazy about getting those healed shots. You know, if I do one that I'm like, I question, right? I'm like, I don't know about that. Like, that was like, we'll see what happens. I need to like talk to this person. There's been a couple that I've been like, okay, I've had to go back and do some things to fix them. And that's part of trial and error. And that's part of pushing something new, right? Is failing and owning up to when you fail and trying to formulate something that will work a little bit better.
How did you said you had a following a bit before tattooing, but once you were really tattooing full time, how did you start to really build your following online?
One thing that really catapulted things for me was I did this, I don't know if you've seen the 3D tattoos, they're like red and blue ones. I did one of those and I started doing it, kind of, it became kind of a regular thing that I did. BuzzFeed got reached out to me and I did an interview with them. And then Huffington Post also reached out and I did an interview with them. Being put on those platforms and those media outlets, just it exploded. It happened so fast.
Yeah, they've got massive audiences.
Yeah, huge audiences. And that leapfrogged into other opportunities and it got shared on a bunch of other different media outlets. And I had a fucking like news camera crew come to my little private studio once and like film me while I was tattooing. It was so weird. Yeah. It was kind of it happened a little faster than I was ready for it too, but it definitely kind of pushed things really quickly.
You started with a following from art, and then mm-hmm. very quickly you gained a following with tattooing. But you're still just a year into tattooing, working at a shop when you're probably getting a lot of praise still on the internet. So, like mentally, what does that do for you? Did it give you a false sense of confidence that maybe you shouldn't have early on, or did you just feel pressure all the time and it pushed you to rise to the occasion?
I've definitely tried my very best to compartmentalize that maybe that false sense of validation, or just the validation that I get from the internet, from the reality of what I'm doing. I don't want to leave behind a path of destruction or whatever, you know? I'm trying to be as realistic about everything that I'm doing as possible.
That just through the short conversation, it really shows that you seem to have the right attitude about everything, and you are in such a unique position, because most tattooers don't just have this boom and this recognition that you've gotten so quickly. So it's refreshing to see the way that you're handling it and what you're doing with it, and just your attitude towards everything, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying, man. You know, like I said, I can be kind of a cynical person, and I spend a lot of time kind of like kicking myself and feeling really like intense self-shame. I feel like I'm not really part of the tattoo community at large in Portland. You know, I don't really know that many people. Like, I don't really like have any like old schoolers that I can like reach out to or hang out with or anything like that. I've tried to embrace just where I am with what I'm doing and just continue on my own path and not try and seek validation from anybody, but just do the best do the absolute best that I can with what I've got. It's been good so far. I mean, I fucking love tattooing, man. It's been an extremely fulfilling way to engage with people and art. And there's something special that happens when you're sitting with a client for like 3 or 4 hours, and there's a certain connection that's already there. They're there for a reason, right? They're there because they want to be there, and it means something to them. It's kind of crazy phenomenon in that you're just putting ink in someone's skin, but they walk out with this like whole experience and this newfound appreciation for themselves a lot of times, you know, that goes beyond the actual act of just tattooing. I don't know. I fucking love it, man. I don't want to stop anytime soon. That's for sure.
You can follow Dave at Winston the Whale on Instagram and find him at his private studio, Good Stuff Tattoo in Portland, Oregon. As of now, he may be the first tattooer whose books are actually closed on this show. But stay up to date with him online for future information about that. This week we are sponsored by Mr. Flash Machine. It has been a while since we have seen a substantial collection of new production tattoo flash. When buying flash, you want to be sure it's going to sell. Your customers all have the entire World Wide Web at their fingertips, so how do we compete with that? Well, Mr. Flash Machine has over 400 sheets for sale that are full of stuff that your customers not only want, but it's stuff that they're not exactly going to find on Google. These are sheets of lined and shaded images that will be the perfect starting point for your customers who want to find that perfect image that catches their eye. Check out some examples at Mr. Flash Machine on Instagram. They sent me 4 sets of their flash to check out, and it was a serious brick of tattoo flash. You could tattoo for an entire career off of this stuff, and I personally plan to never draw again. If you're not pausing this already to go order, then let me sweeten the pot even more. Use promo code BOOKSCLOSED for 20% off your entire order until October 1st. Doing a single tattoo from these sets will pay you back. Get over to at Mr. Flash Machine on Instagram to get all of the info, and don't forget to use promo code BOOKSCLOSED for 20% off your entire order. You can thank me later. Another tattooer who I received an email from was Jake Haynes. Based in Sweden, Jake is a relatively new tattooer whose Instagram already has over 300,000 followers. Ba-boom. You can see his page at Pokeeo. That's P-O-K-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-O-H. There, you'll find a body of work that is made of mainly simplistic, mostly just outline tattoos. In his email to me, he described himself as a real-life Claude Cloud and seemed extremely humble and self-aware for someone with such a massive following. He also sent me a copy of his master's thesis he had written years ago for school about the impact of Instagram on tattooing. Obviously, we've got some things we can talk about here, some things in common. So I'm going to give Jake a call, and I've got my pal, Jason Scott, here with me to sit in for it. Do you go by your real name in public, or do you just go by your Insta name?
My Insta name is absolutely stupid and ridiculous, so I go by my real name, which is Jake.
Perfect.
That name, it's a long story, but I wouldn't have chosen it if I had known my account would get so big.
Right. Do people come into the shop and they say, "Hey, I've got an appointment with Pokeeo"?
Yeah, there's a lot of different iterations of it, I gotta say. A lot of people emphasize the O part. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think that I'm, for some reason, a lot of people think I'm a Japanese woman. Hmm. I think there's something about the pokey part, and I don't know, maybe my tattoos are kind of feminine or something like that. But yep, I'm not a Japanese woman, unfortunately.
Interesting. Isn't it weird how that works, that sort of stuff? We get a perception of someone just based on a name sometimes.
Yeah, well, I know I do, that's for sure.
So you are based in Sweden.
Yeah, I'm in the southern tip of Sweden, in Malmo. It's a pretty small town. There's about 300,000 people here. So it's the third biggest city in Sweden. but it's cool down here. It's right beside Copenhagen, actually.
Yeah. What's the tattoo culture like there? Is there a scene going on or what?
Yeah, it's pretty strong. It's pretty strong. There are a lot of really good shops here. There are a lot of more sort of classic, more traditional studios. Mm-hmm. But it's a really good mix, actually. For the size of the city, I think there are quite a lot of studios and artists. So it's the people here are spoiled for choice, I guess.
Right. Well, that's not a bad problem to have.
No, it's not.
So let's talk a little bit about how you came up and everything, because that's how you first got in contact with me and it really caught my attention. And it's funny because I think you had started following me and I followed you back as to like bookmark you to look more into you. So once I made the connection that I was also emailing with Jake and not the Japanese woman I thought I was talking to on Instagram, then it was a connection for me. So so you didn't have a formal apprenticeship at all?
No. Yeah, well, I guess when I emailed you, I sent you my thesis there.
Mm-hmm. What were you studying in school?
Yeah, I was studying media studies, and they let me, I was both studying and working as a tattooer, and they, for some reason, they let me do my thesis on tattooing and Instagram, and I really don't know how they thought that would be valuable for them, but it was really valuable for me anyway. So so when I wrote to you, I came across your podcast and I realized it was the same topic as my thesis, which was how has Instagram changed the tattoo industry. I started thinking about what I was doing and how I was doing it. I started tattooing in this kind of way that everyone hates now, where you just kind of start doing it at home and then you get your friends who want tattoos and then
that's how I learned in 95. There wasn't a lot of options, but it was still frowned upon.
Yeah, but I guess now the difference is that you can, from going from, you know, having a couple of friends over for tattoos, you can go from that to being a sort of like Instagram star,
right?
Which I somehow, you know, became, and yeah, it's pretty odd.
Yeah. So how fast did your following accumulate?
Pretty quick, but pretty steady. It's like, I started that Instagram 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, so you've been tattooing for how long now?
Yeah, 3.5 years.
Right. So you've had the Instagram the whole time, and it's just been steady growth.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back on Instagram to the first photos, it's like these really, really, really bad tattoos. I mean, I guess they're still not the greatest, but you can go all the way back and see the progression.
I mean, you don't want to be too critical of those, because some of them still might be healing.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I still really like those tattoos. Yeah. I think in some ways I got worse, but...
What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, now I'm... Back then I was so free, you know. I didn't really have that much pressure. I didn't have this pressure of 300,000 people looking at my work either. So I would just, you know, kind of do these tattoos that kind of felt natural. Now I feel like I'm a little bit... like, I worry too much about what people are going to think. It's a bit of a problem, you know?
And do you think it's really truly pressure from 300,000 people, or is it just the pressure that you've put onto yourself because you know that that number is sitting on top of your profile?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I know that not a lot of people see, I mean, not a lot of those 300,000 people know what they're seeing, or they don't really see it because of this algorithm thing. But right. Yeah, I don't know. I think it is quite a lot of pressure anyway.
But let's cut to the chase here. How did you do it? Inquiring minds want to know how to become Insta famous. So lay out the simple steps and then we can all do it too.
Okay. step one, start making tattoos that you can appreciate in 1/3 of a second. I think that's like one of the most important things about Instagram is that when people are scrolling through their feed, they give each photo like, you know, a fraction of a second of consideration. And my tattoos they're mostly line based. There's hardly any shading, and they're pretty small, and they work really well on a tiny little screen. And I think that that's something that's really, really helped me. I mean, it's so easy to like my tattoos on Instagram Whereas someone that's done like a really big back piece, you know, you actually have to stop scrolling and you have to think about what's there and you have to zoom in a little bit. So I think the first thing to do is make really, really simple tattoos. And I kind of hate myself for doing it. You know, I kind of, when I put a lot of work into a tattoo, something bigger, something with shading, something I'm proud of, it never gets very much attention. It's always the one where it's like, you know, three little dots on someone's neck or something like that.
Right.
So I guess that's one thing. Yeah. Make simple tattoos. Second of all, I guess be consistent with how the photos look. My photos are all sort of like desaturated and they all look pretty much alike. It's very uniform. I think people like that. It's comfortable.
Was all this stuff a conscious decision from the start, or are these things that you picked up along the way, or was it just coincidence? Was this the way that you wanted to put your work out, and after the fact you were able to see all the benefits of it?
No, it was definitely not planned, and I have no idea. I had no idea what I was doing, and I still don't.
Are you attracted to other styles of tattooing than the stuff that you do?
Yeah, I am. I really am. I'm actually, I like this minimal style that I do, of course, but I'm always more attracted to other styles, and I always sort of wish that I was able to do them, you know? Like my style of tattooing is not really by choice. It's only because I lack the talent of being able to do other styles.
Do you think that you'll ever branch out and pursue to work in those styles in the future?
Well, I try to, but that's another thing about Instagram. You know, if you put out really homogenous work, sort of all minimal line-based tattoos, and the pictures look the same, then people are going to ask for that. You know, people are going to ask for whatever you've put up. So you can steer your style through what you put up, because that's what people are going to ask for. So, for example, if you want to do a bunch of, you know, little moons, then put up pictures of little moons and people ask for little moons. But for me, it's a bit hard to ask someone to, you know, get an old school tattoo from me when all they've seen is these little like dinky line tattoos on my feet, you know?
Yeah. So do you feel stuck?
Yeah, I do. I do feel stuck. I definitely do. Yeah. So sometimes I ask friends if I can do other stuff on them, and I put out flash that's a little bit different, and I try, but it is very hard. And I think that's another thing about Instagram. Not only for each individual are you kind of like stuck being homogenous, but the industry as a whole. I mean, we're all looking at one another.
Definitely. And I think it has its ups and its downs because of it.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like you get requests for things that come from Instagram a lot now?
No.
No.
The difference being that I'm a street shop tattooer 100%. So there's definitely, and that's not to say that people don't come in because they see my stuff on Instagram, but I would say the vast majority of what I do is on customers who don't know who I am personally, unless they've just from being in the shop. Because most of my online presence is at this point based more around stuff that I do outside of tattooing. So I might have kind of a weird position in that.
You mean like this podcast, for example?
Yeah, or, like it's all surrounding tattooing, but the recognition I get is more for videos in podcasts than the actual tattoos.
For the famous Claude Cloud, I
right?
guess.
Right. That's what will be on my tombstone.
Oh dear! Oh dear! I really like those videos. By the way,
thank you.
I think I saw them when they came out, and I just recognize myself so much in them.
Do you drive a Maserati?
No, that was the one thing I was a little bit disappointed about. I thought, yeah.
Still but, working on it.
A lot of the other stuff, the sort of like amazement with this this little bird tattoo, I think you did in that video.
Yep.
I love that tattoo.
Well, feel free to bite it if you're inclined. I give you permission. You've earned it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So I wanted to ask, while you were working on that paper, which I read the whole thing yesterday, did doing that paper change your mind about anything, or did you learn anything that you didn't expect?
I think one thing that stood out for me personally writing that paper was how I perceived Instagram as something that was like very personal to me. It was very, very much based on personal pleasure, like putting something up and getting the sort of reward of likes and comments and all this. And when I talked to some of the older tattooers for that paper, they said, no, this is just advertising. It's just, I really don't give a shit about, I mean, of course it's nice to have attention on your photos, but for them, it was really just advertising. And after writing that paper and after reconsidering, for me, it also is kind of just advertising. I've become a little bit numb to Instagram. Instagram likes and stuff. So that was something that I learned.
That's probably a good thing for your own mental health, because when we're chasing it for personal satisfaction, then that's when it can really affect us in a probably more often a negative way.
But I will say something about having a lot of Instagram followers. It is pretty much the same as having not a lot of Instagram followers. Like the way that you feel about things. I mean, you know, if you have 10 followers and you get one like, then you'll feel a certain way. If you have 100,000 followers and you get the same ratio of likes, you're going to feel, I mean, what I'm trying to say is I don't feel that different now having 300,000 followers than I did when I had 1,000 followers. It's still the same sort of thing, but just on a larger scale, I guess.
But in terms of business, do you feel, I mean, you must have more people wanting to get tattooed by you than you can almost know what to do with at this point, or would you disagree with that?
No, I disagree with that also.
Interesting.
I live in a pretty small town, and my books are never closed, actually.
Damn.
I'm pretty easy to book. I'm normally booked up for like maybe a month and a half or 2 months or something like that ahead, which is actually amazing and really great, and I'm very, very grateful for it. I guess Instagram is good for attracting people from abroad. So I do get a lot of visitors from other parts of the world, and that's really nice. I mean, the thing is, I have very little to compare with. You know, I've been spoiled. You know, I got a lot of followers pretty quickly, and so I don't really know what it's like not to live in this, you know, Instagram bubble.
Right, and I think it's easy for people to be critical of someone like you, but really it's not your fault. You did tattoos and you put them out and people responded to it. So for whatever that is, and I don't know, I find it silly when people would say that someone like you don't deserve this, or you didn't work for it, or you didn't do what I did, or whatever. You know what I mean?
You know, there's no one that feels more that way than me.
Well, so. but what is that rooted in? Are you like that with everything in your life, or is this just with tattooing because you feel the weight of the tradition that you've kind of not partaken in?
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely rooted in the person that I am. I'm a pretty negative person, I think, in general, and especially about myself. So there's that. But
well, I'm here to tell you that you're worth it.
Thank you. But I mean, the thing is that I see people that have 1,000 followers that are excellent tattooers, you know, really, really good, really good quality. And I think that a lot of the time, you know, when they're like potential customers looking through Instagram, the follower count and the likes are, you know, they're front and center rather than the work. Like people expect me to be some kind of tattoo god because I have all these followers. But in reality, you know, my colleagues at the shop, they have quite a few followers, you know, between 10 and 25,000 or whatever. And they're really, really good tattooers. You know, they really know what they're doing. And I don't really know what I'm doing. But people, I don't know. It's strange. Yeah.
Even though we know that the numbers don't mean anything for us as people, or even as tattooers in a lot of ways, it will still affect us. And it just comes in waves, you know. It depends on your mood. It depends on how you're feeling that day, and it's just kind of a fucked up system that we're all along for the ride on, you know.
Yeah. Well, the more serious thing I think is that it does matter for customers, like in terms of how much they trust you and how far they're willing to travel and how long they're willing to wait to get a tattoo. You know, the followers matter to them.
So, what could we do to combat that as tattooers?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't, I really don't know, but I do put up every time I reach a sort of like milestone of followers, like 300,000 or 200,000 or whatever. I try to, you know, I put out all these like stories or posts saying that, yeah, I have a bunch of colleagues that have not as many followers that are really good. So I guess it's up to those who have a lot of followers to remind people that followers are not really, you know, they're not any kind of indication of talent or skill or anything like that. But it's also hard because, you know, if I have a customer that says, oh, you're really good at tattooing, you have so many followers, I can't really say I'm really bad at tattooing.
I mean, you could.
I'm about to tattoo them. I guess I could.
Well, tell them after.
Yeah, I'll tell them after. They'll know, I think.
Yeah, give them a couple of weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to stop being so trepidatious or trepid, whatever the fucking word is. You got to just accept it. You're a tattooer. You got some juice going, and it's okay.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I really do. I really do. I actually have a question for you, though, before we finish.
Yeah.
When I was writing my paper, when you write a paper like this, a master's thesis, you have to sort of justify why you're writing it, and you have to sort of, you know, predict your outcomes, and you have to have a conclusion, and you kind of got to know that before you set out on the voyage of writing the paper. And do you have some sort of like, why are you doing this podcast?
That's a great question. I definitely didn't have a goal in mind when I started it. I mean, I guess the initial motivation was the fact that I listen to a lot of podcasts and I've always listened to a lot of radio and I've been attracted to that medium as a way of conveying ideas and opinions and everything. I just like to listen to people talk. So I always, I think, in my head would have liked to do something like this, but never had an idea. And I didn't want to do it just a normal podcast where I get a tattooer and I say, when did you start? What makes you like tattoos? Oh, do you have any like cool colors? You know, just the boring, just the same stuff that every surface level interview could get. So once I had an idea for an angle to do it, and I just started to do it. No goal in mind. I had the chance to talk, you know, sit down and talk to a few people in an easy, convenient way. And I was just going to do a few episodes. But it turned into now, this is the 12th episode, and I'm calling it the first season of the podcast, which is indicating that there's a second season coming. And yeah. And I guess as I go, my ideas and opinions are morphing slightly, some more than slightly. And I'm just kind of letting it be, because I think that to try to anticipate the outcome too much, you might shut yourself off to some other things that you can learn along the way.
Fair enough.
Which is why a podcast to me is more, maybe it's more effective than writing a academic paper like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're the first person that's read that paper. So yeah, this is definitely more useful, I guess.
I guess. I mean, but a lot of the things that you outlined are the same as a lot of things that either I've spoken about or other people have said just through conversation. So it.
I know, I'm so pissed that you didn't do this before I wrote my paper. Then I could have just listened to your podcast and wrote down the information.
You probably would have said, I'm going to think of another topic because this is kind of boring.
No.
I guess it's just what I'm realizing through the feedback I'm getting from this is that a lot of people share a similar opinion, and it's giving people validation. And from what I'm being told by a lot of people is that it's making them feel more confident in those opinions. So, you know, I can say, yeah, I'm doing this to help people and I'm doing this for the good of everything, which, I mean, that's a great side effect to it, but I'm doing it because I like to do it. And for me, that's enough. So, yeah, I wish I had a better answer than that, but I guess that's kind of it.
No, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I think.
I just like tats, and I like talking tats with tat people.
Yeah, yep. I think that's why I did my thesis on tattooing also.
Yeah. Well, what would your second choice have been?
Oh.
The implications of pollution on a marsh climate?
No. Actually, it was like exotification in photography, in like National Geographic photography. That was my second choice.
Interesting.
Probably would have been more useful for the world, but
Well, you probably would have had a lot more sources to work with.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was tricky.
Do you have anything else you want to leave the people with?
Maybe just, you know, Instagram is amazing, and I don't want to sound ungrateful for it. I'm very grateful for Instagram, and you know, without Instagram, I wouldn't really be able to be doing what I'm doing. But on the flip side, I think that there is a little bit too much focus on it, and I guess it's easy for me to say from this position of having tons of fucking followers, but you know, followers aren't everything. And I think as long as you have enough business to keep you floating, then, and don't worry about the likes and don't worry about the bullshit, because I'm at 300,000 and it doesn't really make me happy and it doesn't really make any difference. So yeah, maybe that.
Follow Jake on Instagram at Pokio, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes so you don't have to try to type it in. And after this last quick break, Jason Scott and I will be back to dissect this conversation just a little bit and to bring it on home for season one. This week we are sponsored by Kosai Publications. As a tattooer who took on a project like this podcast, where I do every step of the process on my own, I have a massive respect for others that do the same. Kosai Publications is the result of a lot of hard work from tattooer Alex Reinke. His love and curiosity for Japanese tattooing and culture comes through in each book that he publishes. Alex feels that the same quality of masterful tattoo work showcased should be strived for in the craftsmanship of the book. Get a glimpse into some of the best Japanese tattoo work, or irezumi, by checking out kspublishers.com for the Kosai Publications website. There, you can find more info about all the past and future book projects, and I recommend clicking through to the photography section that showcases a selection of photos that serve as just a small example of the beautiful images that are included in these books. Again, that's kspublishers.com, and also on Instagram at Kosai Publications. What do you think about a young tattooer like Jake? Because to me, it seems like he's very humble and he's very self-aware, which is important for any tattooer.
And I think it would be easy not to be.
Yeah.
You know?
It seems like he might be stuck in that rut forever. Because what would change? What could possibly happen that would make him feel more comfortable in being confident? And
well, no, but what happens when the next platform comes along that's not Instagram and we all have to start from scratch again?
But I think it's always going to be relative. Someone with 300,000 followers, when you jump to the next thing, they're still going to have more than the rest.
Absolutely, but where's Tila Tequila, whatever her name was? You know, she had the first million hits, first million friends on MySpace. Look what that got her, right?
I think she does porno videos now.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. She had her 15 minutes, but I don't know. I just wonder. I wouldn't want to get too vested in Instagram in case the next thing comes along.
But I mean in terms of like his real life, like Instagram aside.
He must be hard at work where, like you said, if he thinks everyone at work tattoos better than he does and they're not getting any of the recognition, it must be a daily reminder that he's living something that he doesn't feel like is extremely accurate.
Mm-hmm. It's hard.
It is.
I mean,
hard,
it's good.
But he didn't really choose it. He wanted as many as he could get, I'm sure, but I don't think he ever thought about what it would be like at 300,000, you know?
It's like being a really handsome actor that wants to do art films, but you're just cast as like the lead of the like superhero movies, and you might make a ton of money and it would be great and you can get booked for whatever, but you're never going to be the artist that you feel like you would want to be. And it's almost like a curse.
That Shia LaBeouf guy, right? Was that his name? He turned down.
Yeah, he's all fucked up.
But what were the movies he did? A series of them, right?
I think he did Transformers.
Yeah, yeah. And he turned down one of them and it was like the most money anyone's ever got in an action or whatever, you know? But it was like, I guess it gets to the point where that's not everything, you know?
But I guess in terms of acting, then it's assumed that you get to a point where you can make enough money that you can do stuff that you don't want to do. But with tattooers, we're not making movie money. So you never really get to a point where you can just say fuck it to the rest of everything.
It's weird how Steve even feels not worthy, though.
Steve Byrne?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like to have 300,000 or whatever. I don't know. You know, they're like hairdressers and wherever. And like, you know, he's making excuses for being one of the higher, which he should be. I think, you know, it's like, I'm not surprised that he has 300,000. Plus, he's world traveled and he's from England. And I mean, I think he gets more exposure. Same with Chad, more exposure than the average person.
But it is interesting to think what's the extra push that brings you from like 60,000 to 300,000? Because it's not, I mean, it's very rare for tattooers to have followings that big.
I think, right, 60 to 80 is like the max usually, except for the few exceptional circumstances. I mean, I know there's a lot of European tattooers that have like hundreds and hundreds, right? I don't know if any of them have a million, but...
Well, there's that guy, Dr. Wu from LA, that has over a million.
Does he really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But I think it's because he does tattooing that really stands out and it's unique. And I always say
Is it also linear stuff like that, or is it...
Yeah, it's like really, it's a lot of like small stuff, very finely detailed things.
Scott Campbell-esque?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in that same school.
Yeah.
But he's definitely got his own unique images and ways that he does stuff that I think people latch onto. But I always think that the most attractive tattoos to the general public, which is when you have 300,000 followers, you're accessing not just tattoo people anymore. You're getting like normal people that don't necessarily follow a bunch of tattoos.
Yeah, they have one or two tattoos. And like he said, I think... Small, simple tattoos read better on a small square screen. I never really thought of it that way, but he's right. Like a back piece. I mean, if you're really into it or it's somebody that you really like their style, you might pinch the screen and try to, you know, look at the details. But I think the average person has a, you know, a little thing behind your ear or a little thing on their wrist or something that follows you because, you know, they like your tattoos. And back to the Antichrist, you know, same thing. It was like
Auto Christ. The Antichrist.
Yeah, Antichrist. But anyway, Auto. Yeah. Same thing with like, maybe his tattoos, just like you said,
different,
and you can recognize it in 3 seconds. That's
it's
very true.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas also, I guess some traditional, I mean, you look at a Burke Rack tattoo, 3 seconds kind of does the job, you know?
Right. It's like looking at more than just the tattoo is what you're putting out, I guess is the idea.
Yeah.
To really think about the whole, everything you put out as a whole.
Right. And being a fast food world, I think people like you said, they're giving you 3 seconds. If it's too complicated, they're just going to, because there's so many great tattooers that, you know, don't have any followers or very few. And
but like Jake said, the real problem is that it's the customers that are using that as their validation.
But I guess magazines were too, to some degree. You know, they can only print so many people a month or whatever, so they were kind of picky and choosy. So I guess the people that got in there got credit they deserved or didn't deserve because they were in every magazine.
Yeah.
People thought that because they're in a magazine, they got to be the best. So they got to get tattooed by that guy.
But don't you think magazines were maybe looked at primarily by other tattooers?
Yeah.
Because when I talked to Scott Harrison, he said that he used to try to be in magazines and he couldn't recall any times where a customer would say, I saw you in a magazine. It was more so just to be known within the industry and put your work out in that way.
Yeah, among your peers.
Yeah.
For him, maybe. But I think people like, you know, maybe Aaron Kane or Guy Atchison or people that were doing like that crazy shit. And
again, tattoos that don't appeal to, or that do appeal to normal people because they're like special and they're different.
Right.
Yeah.
So those guys might have benefited more from magazines than Scott would, you know?
Yeah. The kind of tattoos that make someone interested in tattoos who wasn't previously, I guess is the key, whether it's huge, crazy, unique, well-executed biomechanical stuff like that back in the day. Or if it's now these very small, fine line, super simple, but super clean and teched out tattoos that makes people who don't care about tattoos think, well, you know, I would get that.
Right.
Or that would be cool.
Safer, possibly.
Yeah.
Like I always thought tribal was popular because it was safe. You know, they get a tattoo without having an image that they may think in 50 they're going to regret. It's nothing. You know what I mean? It's just a thing, right? And same with like maybe a Chinese character. It's like, you know, like no one knows what it says but you and maybe someone Chinese who reads it. But I kind of feel bad for that guy, though. You know what I mean? I mean, as good as it is for his career, I think it's not healthy for him to feel unworthy and be, you know.
That's what I find so interesting in actually talking to these people.
Yeah.
Because
same with Otto. It's like, you know, you don't know what he's going to, you don't know how he's going to come out, if he's super serious or he's just trolling everybody or if he's, you know, like.
It's so easy to assume.
It absolutely. And everybody does. Everyone has an assumption, whether it's one way, one side or the other. Everybody thinks they know. But till you talk to somebody, it's like, that's kind of, I don't know. Like I said, I mean, financially and work related and stuff, I guess it's good. But I don't think I'd want the pressure if I felt that inadequate, you know, like. He's not, you know what I mean? But he's always going to feel that way. Like, interesting.
Do you think that maybe his lack of having a more traditional apprenticeship might be to blame for him not having the, like, even confidence, the mental tools to be a tattooer.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because
that's a huge part of it. You learn how to be a tattooer from looking at other tattooers doing it. And I don't mean just doing tattoos. I mean the whole thing around it.
Right. And then everyone at the shop probably came up proper maybe. And he kind of felt, you know, he probably feels...
like the oddball.
Inadequate or like, yeah, like unworthy really, or undeserving of so many. They should have 300. He should have 20, you know, like, but it's interesting to hear him say that 1,000 or 100,000 really didn't feel better. You know, you still got 10% of action on however many you have. And it's the same amount of percentage of people that like your stuff or don't, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting where he goes from here. I'd like to see where he is in 5 years.
Right.
You know, if he does go on to other styles or Instagram turns into something else or, yeah, it'll be interesting.
In general, what do you really think about the wave of younger tattooers that are finding their way into tattooing through different avenues?
I mean, if there's a will, there's a way, you know? I found my way in. I was definitely harder, I would say. I don't know. I'd be a hypocrite to say that you have to, you know, do an apprenticeship or come up that way. But I think it's easier. You know, like people complain about apprenticeships and scrubbing toilets and whatever. And it's like, I still think it's easier than wanting it so bad and having no way to get it for so long and having to do it on your own.
I think there's a group of tattooers that came from a time earlier than me that are very set in their ways and are just not willing to look at things in a different way.
Absolutely.
And I understand where that's rooted from, but I don't think that it's going to help anybody else. And I don't really think it helps them because it just leaves them feeling like they're...
Look at music, though. I would say it's probably the same way, right?
With anything.
Yeah. New music comes along, mumble rappers or whatever, you know, like whatever the topic is today that people that came before them and did it a certain way hold it in high regard and they think they're making a mockery of it or they think they're...
Any job. Think about across the street at the post office.
Absolutely.
If some new kid works at the post office and old people are like doing it the way that they do it, they're going to be like, look at this kid thinking he's changing the post office.
Right. Like when Sailor Jerry said he got to Hawaii, you know, like people that got there after him, he's like, oh, he should have saw it in 73, you know, but he's like, when he got there, whatever, people were saying you should have seen it in 50, you know, it's like, but you don't know what you missed. And like, you know, like Tattoo George said, you know, they're living their heyday now, you know, they're going to be telling people later about their first 5 years of tattooing and it's going to be different than those kids' 5 years of tattooing. Like theirs is different than mine. You know, I think it all makes sense. It's all part of getting older and turning into that ornery, grumpy, pissed off older guy. Damn kids, you know, they got it all together at 25 and they're crushing it. They're doing it. It's like,
it's just a different type of person that ends up tattooing now, it seems.
Absolutely. You know, I walked around Montreal and I realized there's a lot of like, you know, 20-something-year-old girls with dyed gray hair. Like, you know, I mean, they look alike. They tattoo alike. They all found the hole in the fence and climbed through at the same time, you know, which is really weird.
And that goes for guys, too.
Absolutely.
For those who are listening.
Oh, absolutely. It's probably,
all the guys look the same. They have...
Well, it's probably... Yeah, it's probably 10 times as many guys, but...
Yeah. I would say there's two types of tattooers, and usually when people come in and they say, oh, I got tattooed by someone here, and they can't think, they say either the skinny guy with glasses or they say the big guy with the beard.
Absolutely.
And those are all tattooers in a nutshell.
Yep. It's like Malone said, the black t-shirt. You know, for years, that's what it was. Every tattooer wore, you know, walked to a convention, every single person had a black t-shirt on. Like, wouldn't wear anything, you know?
And it kind of makes me... When I go to a convention, which isn't as often as it used to be, I just always feel a sense of like, I don't know, maybe embarrassment that people are just so transparently like trying to be the same
thing.
Being
who they think they want to be, or right.
Yeah. And I get it, because we do have similar interests. So it is not unheard of for us to maybe dress alike in a lot of ways or be into the same things, but I don't know. And I've never been one to really try very hard to be super different than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems disingenuous a lot of times when people are trying to be what they think a tattooer is supposed to be.
Of course.
Whether it's like being loud and abrasive and all that. And some people are just that way. And I can respect that. But it's the people who are like forcing it.
Right.
And it was always the same thing when I was skateboarding and stuff younger where... I would skate with all my friends and love it. And then I go to a skate park and I just see, you just like identify the people who are like disingenuous. And it makes me hate the thing that I love almost.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's my problem.
No, I think that's pretty normal. My dad had a couple tattoos from Scully Square in Boston. So I grew up seeing his tattoos, and then he owned a bar, and a couple, you know, customers over the years would come in with a fresh one from the beach or something. And I was always intrigued, you know, and I got my first tattoo at 15 in a shop. Then I got another one at 18, another one at 20, another one at like 23. And that's at 23 was when I thought, man, what a cool, how sick would this be, you know, but I still never believed that I could do it. And then, you know, I always had a job all the way through, and I just kind of picked away and got tattooed a lot.
And tell the story about how you actually finally ended up getting your chance.
Oh, with Mike Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in community college getting ready to graduate, and I'd done maybe 50 or 60 tattoos total. And I had pictures of maybe 10.
Just on your own accord, you were just tattooing?
Yeah. Friends, family, because it was illegal for one. So I couldn't really put out an ad or on a telephone pole or something, you know? Mm. Like a lot of people I'd turn down if I didn't know them, even if they knew someone I knew. I was just afraid. Like, it's not like it was a jailable offense. I just didn't want to be in the paper for tattooing or whatever. Like,
fucking scratcher.
Right. I just didn't, you know? Like, I remember getting tattooed by Julie Moon too, and she was like talking about needing somebody, and I was tattooing, and I was afraid to tell her that I was tattooing, and I was friends with her and comfortable with her. I just didn't, I was afraid of what she would think of me for tattooing.
You knew not to cross that line at that point.
Yeah, especially with somebody like, you know, someone I respected so much. So I was in community college, getting ready to graduate, started thinking I need to, you know, I want a tattoo full time. It was illegal, so I'd have to go to Connecticut or Mass or Rhode Island. Or move somewhere. If I'm going to commute an hour, I might as well just move. If I'm going to move, I might as well really move. So we started, me and my wife started thinking of places, warm, get away from winter, Arizona, Florida. So I went and I made a 11 by 17 color photocopy with my 10 favorite tattoos out of the 50 that I did. And I wrote a letter saying I was looking for a job, willing to start at the bottom, do walk-ins, do whatever it took. Here's some of my stuff. I'm willing to move and relocate. I live in Massachusetts. And Mike Wilson had it was an international tattoo art magazine that just came out with Dave Gibson and Mike Wilson. And I was so into Mike's stuff, I ended up sending a letter to Dina in Orlando where Mike apprenticed. And then I sent one to Mike knowing he couldn't really probably help me because he didn't own a shop. He just worked at Inksmith. But I was so blown away by his stuff, I sent him a letter anyway, which was pretty naive at the time. And it turns out he was on the phone with a kid from Tampa that was complaining that they couldn't find someone to do the small, easy stuff. And Mike was opening his mail and passed my phone number on. And
he just happened to open your letter never at the met time me. He was on the phone.
Yep. Never met me, never heard of me. Opened the mail on the phone and said, call this kid, pass my number on. So Wilson got my first job without even ever meeting me.
He was like, good. Now two of these people that are fogging up my head with their problems and fix them up.
Absolutely. You know, and I told him the story years later and he's like, you're so lucky I was on the phone. Cause normally it's like, I pull it out and it goes, you know, I mean, that's going in the trash. It's like, you know, as I would do now, if some kid sent me, you know, 12 photocopied pictures of his work looking for a job, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But no, I just really got lucky that, yeah, that kid was chewing on his ear saying he couldn't find anyone. And I was, you know, bothering him in his snail mail. So, but a pre-internet, you know what I mean? And then the kid called me. He's like, I got your number from Mike Wilson. I almost dropped the phone. You know, I was like, that worked. Like, I really didn't expect it to work. I was just so into his stuff that I figured I'll send him one. I don't know why I thought he was going to be impressed, you know? I didn't. Right. I don't know why I did it, but I'm glad I did it. So, yeah, that sparked off my first job in a shop, which was pretty crazy. But it was cool. I got to get tattooed from him and tell him the story later on. And he kind of remembered it, which means he probably didn't remember it at all. That's okay. You know? I remember it. So, yeah.
Well, here we are, ending the season the same way we started, with my main man, Jason. Follow him on Instagram at jasonscott523. And you can also hear more from him on episode 1 if you haven't heard that one yet. You can find him in Portsmouth, New Hampshire at his shops Hobo's Tattoo and Congress Street Tattoo, which is also where I work. Remember to please check out this week's sponsors, Mind's Eye Creative, Mr. Flash Machine, and Kosai Publications. All their info is included in the show's description. Now, I really want to thank all of you for hanging in there with me this summer, listening to the show. I've received more messages than I can even handle, but I do read all of them, and I truly appreciate hearing from each of you. Reading about the impact that this little show I've slapped together has had for some others is extremely encouraging, and it definitely motivates me to stay up editing all night, even when I don't want to. Sometimes I just don't want to, but I do it anyway. You can follow me on Instagram at Andrew Stortz. Also, I would love to meet any of you that will be at the Bay Area Tattoo Convention this October. I'll be there with some merch for the show if that sort of thing interests you. And also, I'll be tattooing. So if any of you want to get tattooed, get in touch with me ahead of time to book. Because my books are open. All show notes, information, and videos can be found on booksclosepodcast.com. Please consider giving the show a rating or review wherever you listen. If you are still listening to this right now, you must be enjoying it, so let the world know. I will be back in due time with Season 2 of Books Closed. There will be more great guests and more stories to tell, because you know what they say. Well, do you? Do you know?